Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, I think we've decanted for long enough. It's time to sit back and enjoy Two Sharp Reds with Mark Schwarzer and Ollie Giel.
Oh, I'm pumped. I am pumped because it is my favourite time of the week where myself, Ollie Giel, likes to sit down with, of course, Australia's third favourite son, Mark Schwarzer, and we taste a bottle of red wine and talk about all the comings and goings in the world of football. And towards the end of the episode, we will compare that bottle of wine to a player, past or present. And Mark, as you could probably hear with my intro, I've got a little extra spring in my step today. There's something sort of a bit different. Do you know what it might be?
Something a bit different. I mean, I know you had a big night yesterday, big afternoon, big night yesterday, Super Bowl. Yep. You're a big fan, which... I don't know. You've obviously had enough recovery time to have a bit extra spring in your step.
Yep.
Matty Ryan made his debut for Arsenal. However, Arsenal lost. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I get you're excited about Matty Ryan playing, but you must be down in the dumps a bit about your beloved Arsenal hitting a brick wall again. So, no, don't know. What?
Well, I'll help you out. You know how I'm obsessed with looking at your posts and seeing some of the big names, you know, like John Terry that might like your photo. And I go, oh my God, imagine that. You know, that would be unreal. Yesterday, it happened to me. I've copped a like from someone and I can't believe it. It's only Optus Sports' very own John Aloisi.
No way. How is that even possible? Johnny Aloisi. I didn't even know that he knew where the like button was on Instagram.
I thought, yeah, like, well, he's just joined, hasn't he? So he's
that's
not,
what I mean. You know, yeah. I mean, I think he's been under severe pressure, I have to say. I think he succumbed. I think it was peer group pressure, and he felt that he had to join the club and be part of the Instagram gang, and that's why he's joined. Interesting, very interesting. I'm going to have a chat to him about it, actually, and just make sure that he's a little bit more cautious on which posts he likes and doesn't like. Which post was it that he liked?
It was me on the beach reading just a small excerpt from... Matthew McConaughey's autobiography. So,
yes, you know, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. He'd like that.
Yeah. Mine was more of a chuckle than a like.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, you could do your chuckling faces and all that, but I did a like, but it was more of a chuckle.
Okay. Oh, that's fine. Fair enough. All right. Right. Before we get stuck into the wine, Mark, I think it's important to just sanitize. So I'm just going to pass hand sanitizer over the camera. For you. There you go.
Thank you.
Always continue to mask up, sanitize, keep that going. Right, let's talk wine and then we're going to talk football. I cannot wait to get stuck into this. It's the first time I have had a Lebanese red wine, which is very exciting. So it's a Becker Valley Reserve. The valley itself was established in 1857. The grapes are hand harvested, which allows for a longer ripening period, resulting in fresh, vibrant wine with aromas, flavors of blackcurrant, cherry, and spice. But I don't think I've ever had a Lebanese wine before, which is very exciting.
I think I may have, actually. For some reason, I think I did when I was actually out in Lebanon. I'm pretty sure I did.
No
yeah,
way.
So no.
Jeez, that's all right. How good.
Yeah, yeah, wow. Absolutely. Yeah, I do like to, you know, as you know, when I do travel around, I do like to try the local drops. And it's always really good fun. Well, I've gone for a standard, typical Spanish wine, of course. Marqués de Cáceres Rioja. It
is for you to say.
I know, Jesus, I'm terrible, aren't I? I have to say, I'm terrible at pronunciations. It's made with the Tempranillo grapes selected by hand. It's aged in French and American oak barrels for 12 months, further aging in bottle for served months, highlights for several months. Sorry, what am I talking about? Highlights in red berry fruit structure and complexity.
Okay, Mark, let's get stuck into the football. And there are a few weekend games that we need to discuss. And one position in particular that comes up a lot on the Two Sharp Reds. We love the goalkeeper position more than anything else. You know that. So let's start at least, though, with Arsenal's loss to Aston Villa. That's the first time in, I think the first year of the Premier League that Aston Villa has done the double over Arsenal, which is a pretty good statistic for them. But the story, of course, for most people listening to the Two Sharp Reds that you know have that connection to Australia, was the fact that Matty Ryan made his debut. Not a great opening minute for him. I felt, oh no, I can see where this is going. But he had a fantastic debut. But before we talk about that, just talk me through the moment that you came together. It was it was beautiful. It was lovely.
Yeah, it was nice. Matty's always gives me lots of time when he's about, when I go to the games. So it was nice. Yeah, we were in a really good position, quite, you know, pretty close to where they were going to be warming up. And as he came out, I called out to him to say hi, and he came over. And yeah, it was nice to see him.
So the day itself for him, did you message Matty at all beforehand?
I didn't. You know, because it's a big day as it is, you know. He's making his debut for you know, his new club, massive club in Arsenal. There's pressure on. Well, actually, at that time, I didn't know whether he was going to be playing or not. I didn't want to even ask him that question. I didn't want to put him under any pressure and feel like, you know, it's a difficult one, because when the manager has made it clear that he has a selection sort of headache almost, or he has to think about who he's going to play, I didn't really want to put him under any sort of pressure or feel like he was obliged to say anything. Besides, I wanted him to just concentrate on playing and getting his game, you know, his game head on and everything else. So I left it, but I also knew I was there in plenty of time, and I know quite a few of the Arsenal media guys, and I knew that I'd see one or two of them beforehand. I was able to have a chat with them, and I found out that he was playing. Right. So it wasn't too difficult to find out. So we had the heads up beforehand, and then when the team sheets were given out to us, because we normally get them about, I would say probably 5 or 10 minutes before they're actually shown then with the broadcasters back in Australia or around the world. Yep. So normally there's an embargo on actually releasing on the team sheets. So when they came to me, I let them know that I had the team sheets, and I revealed that Matty was starting, and I said that didn't matter who else was playing. The main thing was Matty was playing.
You're spot on. So as we know, Arsenal went on to lose the game, so it wasn't the perfect day for him. And in particular, the opening, what was it, a minute and a half, I think, that
74 seconds he conceded the goal. And I asked him after the game, I actually mentioned it after the game. I feel a bit bad about saying it, but I did say to him, Matty, I don't really want to say it, but you know, you are only the fourth player in the Premier League to have conceded on debut in under 2 minutes.
Oh no.
Yeah.
And what did he say? Get
yeah, he was like, yeah, cheers for that. Yeah. It's a tough one, isn't it? But the thing is, he played really well afterwards, and then he couldn't have done anything about the goal. At the time where we're sitting, I just thought, oh wow, how did that go in? Because you could see that, you know, the strike wasn't the cleanest of strikes. Mm. But it obviously took a deflection. We couldn't see it at the time. And then it wasn't until probably 5 or 10 minutes later, I actually saw the replay, and you were able to clearly see that it took a big deflection, and there was absolutely zero chance for Matty to make the save. But from that point onwards, anyway, you know, he played well, and it's a testament to him, because, you know, it takes a lot of mental strength. It's difficult. You know, you've got to pick yourself up. You've worked really hard. It's come really quickly. You know, he was injured. He was struggling a little bit. He actually let them know that he was struggling. That's why he wasn't on the bench against Wolves. So he could have easily have kind of kept it quiet a little bit and tried to get through it, take some medication to make sure he got through it. And but he did the right thing and held his hand up and said, listen, I need a bit of a break. I've got a problem with my hip. And then that's the moment where he misses an opportunity to come on as a substitute. But the great thing is, he was fit enough then to make himself available for Villa. And, you know, I asked him that after the game as well, about how was he feeling, what was his thoughts, you know, watching the game at home, obviously, and feeling like, oh my God, you know, I'm injured. I've told him I'm injured. I probably could have been there. And now, you know, is it a missed opportunity? You just never to know, were you, at the time? And he was like, you know, he obviously believes in his own ability, and then did what he had to do and got himself right. And I think, I think Mikel Arteta definitely made the right decision in playing him. And I think overall, he had a really good performance.
I like that chat you had with him when you said, how are you feeling in the Wolves game? And he said, oh, I'll tell you what, by the 75th minute, my hip was feeling a hell of a lot better.
Of course, I know. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, of course, it's amazing. I mean, when you kind of in that sort of position or situation, there are certain moments, sometimes it's that, you know, he's been out injured a little bit, he's got a little bit of a knock, and then there's an opportunity to potentially play the next match. It's amazing how quickly you feel instantly better and your mental approach. And that actually goes a long way to you know, explaining for a lot of people that, you know, in football, particularly with athletes in general, the mind is so powerful. And if you can get the right frame of mind, you can actually get through things. Provided, you know, there are obviously certain injuries you just can't play through, but there are other injuries that you can. And it depends on how strong you are mentally to get yourself through it. And I've been in that situation many, many times before where you've got an injury and you feel like, geez, I shouldn't be playing really. But you don't want to give up your position. You don't want to give anyone else an opportunity. And you know you can still do your job. You just got to grit your teeth a little bit. And yeah, you got to take a bit of medication. I mean, I played probably about 5-6 weeks with a couple of bone fractures in my back. And fortunately enough, they weren't really serious. Like, fractures are fractures, and you know, they can be quite serious. But mine were the little wings off your spine, so it wasn't the main part of your spine. It was just those little wing things just beneath your rib cage at the back. And I landed really awkwardly from a cross, and my arm was on behind my back, and I landed on my back, and my elbow cracked into my back, and it fractured all down a line of those little wings. But I was managing to be able to still play. And it got to the point, I think it was about game 3 of carrying this injury. And it was just before international break was coming up. And we played QPR at home. And I went out there, took my medication, went out there. And I warmed up, did all the usual stuff. And 10 minutes before kickoff, I stretch for a ball. And my back completely goes. And I'm struggling. And I come in and I go straight in and I go, oh, you know, I need something. You know, you've got to give me something else. He gave me a and said, here, this is the best thing and the quickest thing that's going to take effect.
Up the Jack's Crackers.
Yeah, suppository. Oh. Suppository?
Suppository, yeah.
Yeah, depository? Yeah, I'm going to deposit. Suppository.
Suppository.
And it was the quickest thing. So quickly got on the toilet, right, okay, off we go. And I said
Did you take your gloves off?
No, I left my gloves on, of course. Hygiene's of utmost importance. And then the man, I came out and the manager said, how are you feeling? I said, listen, I can play. I said, but the problem is I can't take goal kicks. And if the ball's played back to me as a back pass, yeah, I'll put my foot through and I'll be able to clear it, but I can't take any goal kicks. He says, fine, just go out there. We'll get John and Arisa to take the goal kicks. So he took the goal kick. So it's a massive game. So we're playing QPR, which is a huge, huge sort of local derby. And it's the biggest derby for Fulham, 100%. I mean, even though Chelsea's down the road, but this is more on an even par playing QPR. And we ended up beating him 5-0 or 5-0 or 6-0. I can't remember anymore. And it was massive. We were unbelievable. And I actually had quite a few saves to make in the game. But I got through it, and then afterwards we had international break, and I was able to get over that hump of the injury still not really healing. And then I did like 10 days of, hyperbaric chamber and all sorts of stuff, and I managed to actually get over it. And by the time I come back from international break, I did miss going back with Australia, and I was almost 100%, which was amazing.
So when we're speaking about injuries, it also really impressed me, going back to Matty Ryan briefly, that it must be really difficult to just join a club. You know you've only got a short-term contract for the time being, and then you're injured pretty much straight away. That must be really uncomfortable for him to even pipe up and say anything in the first place. So I think with all of that in mind, you've got to take a hat off to Matty Ryan for doing that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the thing is, it depends on what sort of injury you have. And like, he obviously had a hip problem, probably, you know, maybe a bit of an aggravation of you have a like bursas on your hips as well. So it could be that, it could have been a bone bruise. I actually don't really know what injury it was. But if it's just more of an impact injury or a constant impact injury, it's not so bad. Mm. And you can get over it, you can get by it pretty well, pretty easily. You can restrict the training a little bit you're doing just to be a little bit more careful. It's not so bad. If it's more of a serious injury, like a tear or a break or whatever, then it's a bit more difficult, I think. But the fact is that his was not such a major injury, and something that obviously, clearly, you know, even just missing one game during the week and reducing the workload, that he was able to get back and be sufficiently fit enough to then play. I think it's never great when you get injured at any time. It's a nightmare. But I think there's a certain element of frustration. But the fact is that he obviously mentally was strong enough, and he's physically looks after himself and does everything he possibly can, and it all works in his favour. And that's why he recovered so quickly.
Now, million-dollar question, to which I feel like, unfortunately, I already know the answer to, but has he held his spot, do you think, at least for one more game?
It's really difficult. I don't think so, because, you know, you've got Bernd Leno, who, yes, he was sent off. You look at it and you go, right, how has Bernd been playing throughout the course of the season? And he's actually been playing well. So, yes, he did get sent off. He made a mistake and got sent off. I can't imagine for one moment that Mikel Arteta is going to actually punish him for that and leave him out. And because it kind of would be a bit of a punishment, you know, because he's been playing well. He is the number one and has been the number one. I know Matty's gone there and he's there to put pressure on him and really push him. I just feel that it's going to be a lot more difficult for him to hold that spot.
Okay, Matt, let's move on to another game and sort of sticking with that position, because we did say earlier that there was going to be a little bit of goalkeeper chat, but Liverpool have lost again at home. They've now lost to Brighton. They've now lost to Burnley. And they've now lost to Man City, which I think is, yeah, that's okay when that happens. But 4-1, and your man Alisson, possibly, would you say, worst game he's played in a Liverpool shirt?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. No doubt about it at all. And listen, he's a world-class goalkeeper, and everybody can have an off day, and he's certainly had an off day. He's normally very, very reliable, very rarely makes a mistake, and very rarely makes a mistake with his feet. And obviously, he's made two massive mistakes that led directly to goals with his feet. Trying to play out. I don't know. Maybe because he was ill, sort of rush back a little bit. I don't know. I don't know if that had a part to play in it. A little bit complacent, I felt he was too relaxed on the ball. And sometimes if you're so good at something, you kind of take it for granted sometimes. You get a little bit too, maybe, I'm not saying cocky, but you just get a little bit too overconfident. Let's put it that way. And it just seemed like, particularly the first one, he got away with a missed kick. Then he got the ball back again, and he rushed it again and miskicked it again. And it was just like, wow, like, okay. I mean, I've done that myself, but I've gotten away with it. You know, you get a couple of balls back, and then next three, four, you just completely mishit them every time. And you're just thinking, right, you know, I've got away with that, wow. Or you put yourself under a lot of pressure, put the team under a lot of pressure, and you've gotten away with it. But then it got punished for it. And then the second one was like, he's just like, I don't know. It looked like he was still thinking about the first mistake.
Yeah.
And he hadn't moved on. And as difficult as it is, you've got to move on. You've got to completely forget it, or try and forget about it, put it to one side and go, right, okay, I've messed up, but on with it. And he gets the ball back, and he just looks like he's got the ball too close to him. He's got no room to even put his foot through it. And then in the end, he panics and he tries to find someone rather than, and Jurgen Klopp said it after the game, put it out in the stand. But this is also a result of the way that the modern game is being played, and particularly the way Liverpool want to play and Man City play and all these teams play. You're going to get mistakes because more often than not, because of the sheer number of times you play out at the back, then players overplay in times when they shouldn't be playing, and they just make the wrong decision. And that happens. Everyone's human. Everyone makes a mistake. And actually, I think it affected him so much that he should have saved the fourth, in my opinion. You know, Phil Foden, listen, everyone talks about wonderful touch, which it was. It was a brilliant touch with his left foot, tucks inside and gets off a shot, strikes it really well, but it's straight down his throat. And he goes underneath it and it ends up in the back of the net. And yes, it does go on the roof of the net. It was hit with you know, some certain, you know, with some serious pace. But for me, Alisson saves it every day of the week normally. He doesn't concede that. But his head is still with those two previous mistakes, as was his head with the first mistake for the second one. Mm. You know, he actually didn't move on. That was what surprised me a little bit with him, that he let each mistake affect him and it snowballed into the next one. And the last one, sorry to interrupt, the last one doesn't go down as a mistake. The last one just goes down as, for me, it kind of added to the poor goalkeeping performance. It's not a mistake, but it's, he has to save it. So it's one of those ones, like, he, because he's got underneath it, he's reluctant. And like I said, I think he's still thinking about the two previous mistakes.
So when Liverpool lost to Brighton, I remembered at the time as well that you will look back, say, for example, in 6 months' time and look on the team sheet that Alisson didn't play and you go, oh, okay, so maybe that's why. But Quinton Kelleher actually played a really great game. So now going back to what we were sort of talking about with Ryan, and if, you know, if he started the next game, it would be punishing Leno. You'd almost have to think, you know, I couldn't believe I'm even saying this really, but you kind of, do you think you might have to punish Alisson in that situation? No. And go, well, I'll tell you what, Kelleher, you know, why not?
No, absolutely not. No, listen, you can't just punish someone or drop someone off one bad performance. Yes, it cost them the game, but he has been outstanding since he's been at Liverpool. He's a big reason why they won the Champions League and why they won the Premier League title, because of him. He's played an enormous part of it. There's no way in the world that you can drop him after one bad performance. And yes, it was a doozy. But all I would say is they lost 4-1. He's for me, he's accountable for three of the goals. Better off getting it over and done with in one game than do it over the course of three games. Mm-hmm. So it is what it is. And he's strong enough, big enough shoulders and good enough to recover from it. Absolutely. And for me, he's a clear number one. Keller has done unbelievably well. Don't get me wrong. But no way in the world should that be a change. And there won't be. No way in the world it will be.
Were you surprised when you looked at the team sheet that Jurgen Klopp didn't play either Kabak or Davies?
Davies wasn't even on the bench, which was a little bit surprising. Kabak was on the bench. I kind of get not playing Kabak. I get it. Right. He's come from Schalke. Schalke's like a dire situation. His confidence itself can't be great. So he's going to take a little bit of time to integrate. The pace of the game is completely different. Davies is a different one. I thought there was a chance he may play. I thought he may play next to Fabinho and put Henderson back in midfield because they clearly suffered in midfield. Yeah. Henderson's a big loss in midfield. Absolutely enormous. So I am a little bit surprised by that. But you know what? Jurgen Klopp's a manager. He's done it throughout. And he said it before the game. He wanted to go with almost like a bit of safety and a bit of the experience, the players that have played in the team for a long time, his go-to players. So even though they're out of position in Fabinho and Henderson, I mean, Fabinho's been unbelievable as a centre-half. I mean, I think he's better at midfield, but he's been unbelievable as a centre-half. And Henderson's done a really good job, but it's the first real big test against some really, really good opposition. And I thought he got found out a little bit. And that's only because he's playing a different position. He's not playing his regular position. For me, Henderson's a top player. And I felt for him a little bit. But the goals kill them, as it always does. And it's not necessarily the goals per se, it's the mistakes, because then everyone drops. And particularly the first one, yeah, a little bit. Particularly once the second one goes in, the second mistake, so the third one. Then once the fourth one goes in, obviously the heads are all gone completely. And in terms of self-belief, confidence, it's gone. The game's done. So I was a little bit surprised, but then I also understood why he went with such an experienced and assured side.
Hats off to City in the end. They are really hitting their straps. And you mentioned one boy's name on that side, and that's Phil Foden. He's absolutely firing at the moment. It just feels like, especially with the international, you know, side, it's very exciting. Hopefully, for England's sake, is an exciting time. But you just worry, with our favourite position, Mark, that it almost will count for nothing if they don't have someone decent between the sticks.
Yeah, Yeah, true. It could. I mean, Phil Foden has been brilliant. He really has. And I think, I mean, I've been listening, watched the game on the weekend, obviously listening to a lot of the other commentary that's been spoken about or talked about in terms of Phil Foden and the way that Pep Guardiola has dealt with him and held him back and waited for the right times. Let's see whether he sticks with him now. Gives him that proper run in the side, allows him to continue to flourish now. I think for a lot of reasons, it's been a kind of a good thing that Kevin De Bruyne's out of the side. For me, he looked a bit tired, Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah.
So the injury is probably, in a way, a little bit of a blessing in disguise. And actually, it's allowed people like Bernardo Silva and Gundogan to come to the fore. And Gundogan's been outstanding. I've always liked him as a player, but I always felt there was something more to come from him, but he just didn't deliver it. And you kind of thought, well, is that going to be it? Even though he's been a great player, don't get me wrong, he's still a really good player. Now he's gone to another level.
And he's playing like the player they bought, isn't he, really?
Yeah, like you'd expected him to develop into, because most players have improved dramatically under Pep Guardiola. Gundogan's sort of kind of done it this season. I mean, he showed glimpses, there's been definitely, but this season he's really been consistent, and it's been no coincidence also that he's become even better once Kevin De Bruyne has been out of the side. So I think the balance of the side actually at the moment is actually really good. Funny enough, I think they're over-reliant on Kevin De Bruyne, as wonderful a player as he is. I just found that at times they were too reliant on him. He was always their go-to man. Now it's spread around a little bit more. Other players are taking more responsibility.
Won't be long. Back to Ollie and Mark in just 15 seconds. If you enjoy Two Sharp Reds, though, make sure you search Gegenpod wherever you get your podcasts. David Wiener is joined by thousands of games of experience both on and off the field. It's a great listen. Gegenpod. The Gegenpod. Okay, back to Two Sharp Reds.
Halftime drinks here on the Two Sharp Reds. Mark, Super Bowl went off. And I want to ask you a question. And it's not, you know, I don't like making comparisons to people in other different sports. I think it's ridiculous. It's sort of a bit of a moot point. But I'm sure you've heard, the term of the GOAT, the greatest of all time, being tossed about with Tom Brady. I want to know, can someone in their chosen field be considered the greatest of all time in whatever field that might be, in a sporting arena at least, if they haven't won multiple titles? So Tom Brady's now won his seventh ring. So say, for example, Messi hasn't won the World Cup, you know, and so then if we're all comfortable, say, for example, if we all agree that he is the greatest of all time, because he hasn't won that, can we then say that that person is the greatest of all time? What are your thoughts? Do you need to have won?
It's funny, because the people who generally say that Messi hasn't won the World Cup, so therefore it can't be classed as the greatest of all time, are the ones that have actually won it themselves.
Sure.
So, and they're the people that I suppose are in that position whereby, hats off, you won the World Cup. And listen, for me, it's so difficult to compare players from different generations. I do look at it. I've seen footages of Pelé. I've never watched him live. You know he's won the World Cup, what, two, three times, how much involvement he was in, how instrumental he was with Brazil, young age, I think 17 years old when he won the first World Cup. Scoring over 1,000 goals. He the bar is so high, right? Mm. The only thing is, Pelé was at a time where he actually didn't play in Europe.
Yeah.
So it's a really difficult thing to compare, but I still look at Pelé and go, he is, if not the greatest, but very close to being the greatest. And I think it's so difficult to compare. I think Messi is definitely one of the greatest. I think Cristiano Ronaldo is one of the greatest. Neither of them have won the World Cup, but they are definitely one of the greatest. You can't keep performing at the level they are. I mean, and this is the thing, your argument, your question about, well, George Best, retired at 27, never played at a World Cup, but still regarded as one of the best players to have played in that sort of position. An unbelievable player, but of a different era, different style of football. Yeah. You know, you hear things about him, what he got up to just before kickoff, but he was warming up in a different type of way. Sure, he wasn't warming up out on the football pitch, you know. and how good he could have been had he have not drunk so much. You know, I just don't think I like to put him in a group and go truly world class, this group, you know, international class, whatever it is, you know, top class. But the truly world class Pelé, you know, Maradona, Ronaldo, Messi, Eusebio. I mean, there's so many of them. Beckenbauer, I believe, should be in that group as well. Rossi. There are so many names. I mean, I've missed out loads, but you know what I mean? There's a whole list of them that would go in that group.
Now let's get that American football and change the shape a bit and head back to the round ball, because that's why we're here. And I suppose it's not a bad time to actually ask this. I'm going to change the running order a little bit, and I don't want you to stress out because of that. I know you find it uncomfortable if I miss things, you know, go over the top. So don't worry, we'll be back on course soon. But while we're talking about America, before the MLS kicks off, your thoughts on Phil Neville going to Miami? I can't decide if it's a backwards, if it's a sideways step. I can't kind of, or is it a step forwards? Or what do you think?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because he was obviously down as, I think, assistant manager at Manchester United under David Moyes. Then after that all sort of kind of ended not so well for David Moyes and co. David Moyes obviously, I think, went to Sunderland afterwards, but Phil Neville didn't follow. And then he went on his own little path kind of thing. Obviously, he had that little brief stint with Gary Neville at Valencia. And then the opportunity came along to manage the women's side, the Lionesses. And I think I just wonder whether or not he kind of had limited opportunities over here in Europe to continue. Or maybe it was a lifestyle change. Maybe he decided from a family perspective, a lifestyle a change, a challenge in terms of a new franchise. Obviously, one of his best mates is a part owner of it. Probably, you know, there's no relegation, there's no promotion kind of fight going on. So there's none of that pressure. Mm-hmm. But there's an opportunity to potentially grow something massively into something very, very special. And yeah, it was a little bit surprising, but maybe it's through lack of opportunity over in Europe.
You think maybe if the Lionesses had won the World Cup, then potentially his stocks start to grow a little bit more, do you think, maybe, if that had happened?
At the moment, if you look at the men's game and the women's game, there's very little crossovers. So there's guys, people going across from the men's game into the women's game, but very rarely is it the other way around. Yeah. That will change over time, 100%. So I think once a manager decides to go across over to the women's game from the men's game, it's very difficult for them to come back at the moment in time. And hopefully that changes really soon. Hopefully that actually the women coaches, anybody involved in the women's game, will get the same recognition and respect that everyone does in the men's game. That's going to take time. I think the women's game's come along in leaps and bounds, and it's been incredible. I mean, I loved going to the Women's World Cup in France in 2019. It was amazing. The quality, the level of it was exceptional. Listen, 2023 is an unbelievable opportunity for the Matildas on home soil for Australia to host a Women's World Cup. Is going to be amazing. So it's going to take time, but it's definitely heading in the right direction.
All right, let's get back to the running order. I could see you sweating and twitching just a little bit that we went off course there. I always love when I get to put Tottenham on the running order for certain reasons. Yes, okay, first of all, I should say, very convincing win against, again, a very disappointing West Brom side, 2-0. But I want to, in particular, ask about Jose and Gareth Bale. What's going on? It's bizarre. It is so strange.
It's very, very strange. There's very little said from Jose about Gareth Bale. Gareth Bale obviously has been very, very silent. I just go back to the game a couple of games ago when they played away at Brighton. They lost 1-0. Gareth Bale started the game, played, I think, 65, 70-odd minutes and then was substituted. He just looked... Firstly, his facial expressions, his body language, he looked like he was an upset boy. It looked like something had happened before the game, leading up to it, the day of the game. I'm not sure. And he looked upset. And he was an absolute shadow of himself on the pitch, even in terms of closing the opposition down, work rate. Quality on the ball was really, really surprisingly off compared to what we're used to seeing from Gareth Bale. So, yeah, I don't know. Obviously, it's something's not right. There's no doubt about that. You don't have to be Einstein to work that one out. What it is, anyone's guess. Is it a case of, you know, Gareth Bale's just had so many injuries to deal with? He's played so little football in the last couple of years. He's had a lot of injuries. He came to Tottenham injured. He was kind of behind the eight ball from that perspective. Maybe he's not able to get back to the levels that are expected of him. I really don't know. It's always difficult as well when you come back to a club. Don't forget, when he left Tottenham, he was unbelievable. Had the world at his feet.
Freak. Yeah.
He was an absolute freak. And now he's come back as obviously a lot older and someone that's had a history of late of having a lot of injuries and struggling to get game time. So, and obviously Tottenham's moved on as well.
Yeah.
So it's a tough one. It really is. And I don't know. It's almost like somewhere along the line that the switch has been turned off. And I don't know whether that's even possible to turn it back on again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what is even going to happen? So he's 31 years of age now. We're assuming that perfect scenario for Real Madrid would be that this loan move became permanent, which is absolutely not going to happen now. It would be a miracle if Tottenham wanted to buy him after this. So he'll go back there. He's got his contract runs out in 2022. Do you reckon he just waits that out and then either retires or...
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, like the only question I'd ask is, has his move now, his loan move to Tottenham, hampered any opportunity he may have to go to China?
Can't tell me they wouldn't like the name, though, just in general.
Yeah, but there is an element of that, right? But they need a performance. There's no point signing someone just on a name alone and they're not able to deliver. And they're no mugs. They're incredibly fit, well-organized. They're getting better and better all the time. The league is actually at a decent level. So you can't go over there and think it's a holiday. Mm. There's no retirement. It's not a retirement village.
No.
A lot of guys have gone over there at also at a particularly young age. So because the money is so good. I mean, the contract that he was offered reportedly, what, £1 million a week when he almost went last season? I don't think there's going to be anything near that on offer, if at all.
Yeah. Maybe he goes to Miami. Look, there you go.
Again, you know, it's like him coming to the A-League.
Yeah.
You've got to be fit. You've got to be able to get around. You've got to be able to have that burst of pace because – for, you know, whether it's the A-League or whether it's the MLS, whatever quality they may have drop off from the European leagues, the top leagues in the world, they make up for in fitness and work rate. And that's something that you certainly can't underestimate. And I know of a lot of people who have gone out to Australia in particular and the US and have said, wow, it is so physically demanding. And the work that they put in, the training you do, and the expectation in terms of work rate on a match day is intense and it's right up there. So you can't go there thinking, it's my retirement, it's going to be easy, because it's not.
Mark, let's get our passports out the drawer. It's time to take a trip around Europe. Champions League is almost back. It's coming back next week, but of course next week, I'm very excited to say as well, we won't say who, but someone's replied to you, which is very exciting, and you've organised a special guest for next week. Which is very exciting. So we'll probably be focusing on that. So let's just, have a bit of 1 week until the Champions League's back. We'll have a bit of a preview of that. Some great games, RB Leipzig, Liverpool, Barcelona, PSG, Lazio, Bayern Munich, Atletico, Madrid, Chelsea. Any of those games tickle your fancy?
Obviously, you know, interested to see how Chelsea respond now in Champions League. I mean, they've done really well since Tuchel's taken over. how, you know, how does that transfer into European football? Listen, what Tuchel did last season at PSG was exceptional. Chelsea will be expecting the same by then. They'll have another couple of games under their belt, and hopefully, from Chelsea's perspective, they'll keep winning, and then they'll go into that game with a lot of confidence. Bayern Munich, of course, now at the moment away at the World Club Championship, so World Cup. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
You know, they'll be certainly desperate to try and win that, and then continue that march onto Europe as well, and try and retain the Champions League trophy. Yeah, I'd be interested to see how Liverpool do after this run. You know, Liverpool are playing Leipzig now in Hungary because they can't play in Germany. So again, let's see how that transpires. How does Liverpool react? How does Liverpool go in Europe? I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to Champions League football coming back again. Champions League football is brilliant. The quality is exceptional. And this is the moment. The knockout stages are the most exciting part of it.
Do you reckon with that Liverpool game, surely Kabak will start that game against RB Leipzig, you'd think, with any sort of Bundesliga nous and knowledge?
Yeah, there's got to be a point of starting to integrate these guys. You can't bring them in and just not integrate them and start playing. I mean, I think on the weekend, the performance against Manchester City with a makeshift back four, two centre-halves, and lacking in midfield, I think it was confirmation for Jurgen Klopp that, you know, everybody's kind of written them off now of having a chance of retaining the Premier League title, which I don't think is entirely fair because there's still enough games, more than enough games for Liverpool to get back in it. But it's going to be really tough. So I think it's an opportunity for him now to go and go, okay, right, you know what? I brought these two players in. One of them's got to, I've got to bring one in straight away. I've got to start now integrating both, trying to get both of them into the side, get my midfield back into place. Because if they get a really strong midfield back into place, get their first midfield in place, the back line will be under less pressure.
Mm.
But until such time, it's kind of like a snowball effect. I mean, Shaqiri's come in and struggled. Hasn't been able to lift his game. He's left his performances. And that's partly because he's hardly played. Let's be honest. He's been a bit part player for the best of, what, 2-3 seasons now. So you've got to, I think he has to get back to Jordan Henderson in midfield. And if not, also get Fabinho back in midfield.
Now, Lazio, Bayern Munich, as you said, buying away at the Club World Cup at the moment. Give us a Bundesliga update, please. Give the people what they want. They want to know what's going on in the world of German football, Mark. You're the man for it. What's happening?
Well, Bayern have got that little bit of a gap now, a little bit of breathing spot, a space. They won on Friday night, which was a good win, 1-0 away from home. It's whether or not the chasing pack, Wolfsburg are up there, Eintracht Frankfurt have kind of come back into it again after Adi Hütter, the manager at Eintracht Frankfurt, kind of was under a lot of pressure the last couple of seasons because they failed to sort of get back into European places. They failed to get any sort of consistency, looked like he was under severe pressure, and they seem to have turned it around. Dortmund have just fallen. They're really, really struggling. Obviously, Lucien Favre was released of his duties a couple of weeks ago now. They've got an interim manager, which is never great. And what's just come to light is they're going to make a loss this year of €75 million down to COVID. And they're not the only one, don't worry. They're one of the first ones to come out and openly admit it. There's going to be a lot of clubs all over the world that are going to have massive issues. So they've admitted already that, you know, the likelihood is they're going to have to sell. And Jadon Sancho's right up there, and they're going to have to sell another player at least of one of their big players to balance out the books. So Dortmund, as good as their production line is, as wonderful as it is to see these young talented players come through, you can't genuinely regularly put a genuine attempt to win the league each year, because if you keep changing, if you keep selling your best talented young players, or the speculation is around Jadon Sancho, the speculation last summer, I think, certainly hampered him and hurt his form, because it took a couple of months for him to get back into form again. And he's sort of also been up and down for the vast majority of the season. So I think they're pretty certain that, I mean, from all the indications I'm getting, is that he will be going in the summer. And the asking price won't be as high as it was last summer. So that's the risk they ran. The risk they ran was that he didn't quite hit those heights again. COVID hit. The whole transfer system, the whole valuation of players has dropped a little bit. And I think they'll do really, really well to get anywhere near 100 million for him.
Jeepers,
whereas
really?
Last season they were, I think Man United offered pretty much 98, 99 or something like that million. I just don't think they're going to be doing that again in the summer.
Okay, Mark, it's time to wrap things up here in the Two Sharp Reds. Let's talk about our wine. We've got to get back to that. Oh, by the way, speaking of wine, I found a wine cellar up the road from me. So I'm thinking not next week because we've got our very special guest on, but maybe the week after I'm going to go and do the episode from there. I think that'd be nice. That'd be really nice.
Very nice. Very enticing. I'm really jealous because the fact is that you're obviously, you're not in lockdown. You're able to move freely along around the island, albeit, you know, it's 1 meter, one kilometer by 1 kilometer, if that.
Yeah.
Which is amazing though, still. Beautiful beaches. I've been watching your posts on Instagram. If anyone has not seen it, go on to Ollie Gill's Instagram account and have a look at him frolicking on the beaches. And also, I think you've got a couple of guest appearances. Certainly David Hasselhoff was in one of them.
The Hoff, then there was the Beach Boys, Matthew McConaughey. Put it this way, why I'm not on TikTok is beyond me. That's all I'm going to say. I just can't believe it.
I mean, you know, let's just wait. I hold your breath. Don't hold your breath too long because I won't TikTok be very
sort
long
stuff.
At all.
Yeah.
I think you'll be there soon, won't you?
Yeah, it won't take long. So I've gone for today on the Two Sharp Reds. I've gone for the Beaker Valley Lebanese Reserve. It's first Lebanese wine I've had. I very much enjoyed it. The valley, of course, was established way back in 1857, Mark, which is, I don't need to tell you, a very long time ago. Very nice hand-harvested grapes, which I believe as well, your wine was also hand-harvested, which is quite nice.
Not this one, no.
It wasn't? Oh,
sorry. It is, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Mm. Yeah, Tempranillo grapes selected by hand.
Sorry, what was that?
Yeah, you're right.
I'm wrong.
You're correct, Ollie Gill, for the first time in a long, long time.
Back at Optusport HQ. Just snip this one up. Thank you very much. And we'll keep this in the archives. But yeah, very much enjoyed it. Hand-harvested grapes, which allow, of course, for a longer ripening period, resulting in nice, fresh, vibrant wine with aromas and flavours of black currant, cherry, and I think a bit of a favourite flavor here in the Two Sharp Reds, certainly of the last couple of months, is spice. I think that sort of started to come up. I don't know if it's on purpose, if it's pure coincidence, but our wines have been, you know, had a little bit of spice to it, which I've really enjoyed.
Yeah, most of the time they are, aren't they? Full of berries and full of spice, mostly. So, yeah, I mean, do you want me to continue now? Or are you
happy? You go. No. Well, actually, I'll go.
All right. Oh, wow.
Because I'm right. Because you said I'm right. No, look, I've just described the wine, so I might as well bosh this through when I'm talking about who I'm going to compare it to. Of course, handcrafted, in my eyes, also means local. This guy is very much handcrafted by a certain club, but he's sort of taking a long time to ripen. So, and I think hopefully we're starting to see that now. But he's gone away from the club and he's been that fresh and vibrant flavour that I think that club needed in particular. And we saw on the weekend he scored. So I'm going to give this nice, fresh, vibrant addition. It's taken a long time for him to ripen, but he's been a handcrafted local talent from the Hale End graduation system at the Arsenal. I'm going to give it to Joe Willock.
Of course you are.
Of course I am. Joe Willock. That's like the most random name ever. Come on.
No, because it's Arsenal and everything else. No, listen, I like it. It was a good description.
Thanks,
it really befitting to your wine, I have to say. Cheers. So, anyway, let's move on to my one, more importantly. Spanish wine, Marqués de Carreres, Rioja, and it's a Crianza. Very lovely Spanish wine, which... I can't say a bad thing about it, let's be honest. It's aged in French and American oak barrels for 12 months. So that in mind, being aged, being kept back, this is very much related to my player. Mm-hmm. The manager decided that he wasn't going to introduce him too often, hold him back. Described him as actually the best player the most talented young player he's ever worked with, which is quite an accolade to receive from this manager, considering who he has worked with. So he's done it really, really well, because at the moment seems to be paying dividends, held back, allowing to develop, allowing to flourish. And that's been happening right now. He's a player that is silky, silky smooth, and at the same token, looks elegant on the ball, incredibly elegant. Yeah. And we saw that with a fourth goal at Liverpool the other night, outside the left foot touch, silky smooth touch, gets it down and elegantly runs at Robinson.
Yeah.
And cuts back inside and smashes it into the roof of the net, none other than Phil Foden. And it very much is befitting this red wine from Spain.
I was worried when you said elegant. I went, well, it made sense when you said elegant on the ball, but when you look at Phil Foden, elegant he ain't.
No, but he looks on the ball, he looks incredibly elegant and silky. Word. Yeah. Looks brilliant.
I think both gold stars for us today. I think we did well there. Good work. Good, you know, good punditry. Good, you know, good tasting. You know, good jokes from my behalf. I was pretty happy with that. Some of those jokes. I haven't edited yet.
You're already happy. You're only happy because I said you were right for a change.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Haven't edited the podcast yet, but I'm assuming that'll be really good as well. So I'm feeling good about this. It's been a good day. And if you think it is just as good, of course, please continue to leave reviews, comments, few stars, all of that. All feedback welcome. But as we've said before, Mark, that the bad ones I will delete. So all feedback's welcome. But
I don't mind a bad one if it's decent constructive banter, critique. I don't mind that. I don't have a problem with that. I just don't like the one that are foul and abusive and just no thought in it whatsoever. Just a standard anonymity and can write and say whatever they want. That just pretty much sums up social media as a whole, doesn't it?
Oh, anyway, absolutely.
How pretty sad is that?
It just as I let you go as well, that reminds me of after I did my first show on BT Sport for the AFL show, someone tweeted BT Sport saying, "Hey BT, can you lose the buffoon with stupid hair and even worse dress sense from the AFL coverage? If I wanted to hear dribble like this, I would have watched a Donald Trump press conference." And whoa.
So that's got to be the first time and only time you've ever been compared to Donald Trump, right?
I know. Well, I didn't mind that so much. It was more the dress, the hair and the dress sense that I took offense to.
Yeah, I can imagine, because you are super, super protective when it comes to that, aren't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, I was a bit gutted. Anyway, shout out to the Milk Monster, I think he was called. It shows that people don't forget, lives in my head rent-free from the Milk
Monster. And Ollie Gill is at this moment tracking you down, so beware. Look over your shoulders and don't go down any dark alleys, because Ollie Gill will be there.
You'll see a curly mullet just lurking around and a shitty grown moustache. That'll get anyone scared. Mark.
Exactly.
Absolutely great episode. Big cheers.
Been fantastic. Really enjoyed it. And next week, listen, any of your listeners out there, make sure you tune in for next week, because I've got a surprise for you. Got a guest on, this player. I'll give you a little bit of a hint. Ex-player, played his entire career at one club, and that was Aston Villa. Had opportunities to leave, didn't, and is an Aston Villa fan, player through and through, and his entire career there. And he'll be on the show next week. Cheers, mate.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.